good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Haze has become a recurring annual problem for years now. It's affecting millions of people. It's caused and causing major health and economic impacts. So over the next half an hour or so, we're going to be taking a closer look at the root causes of haze and what's being done to address this ongoing and burning issue. Joining me now is Dr. Helena Varkey. She's an Associate Professor of Environmental Politics at University of Malaya. Her areas of expertise include transboundary haze, governance in Southeast Asia, and global palm oil politics. Helena, thank you so much for joining me on the show. I appreciate your time. Now, if I may start with a comment made by the Environment Minister, Nick Nazmi. He said the haze this time around is caused by the current hot weather, peat fires and open burning. I want to ask you if that is in line with your observations, and could you explain the broader context as to what actually causes haze here in Malaysia? Why is it back?
Sure, Melissa. Thank you so much for having me on your show. So let me just start by giving the basics. So haze in Malaysia can be both local and transboundary. So local fires will usually cause localized haze, which is what we are seeing happening now and what the minister, I believe, is talking about. So for example, we know now we have fires in Bachok, Kelantan, and the situation is because we are having hot weather, so fires can happen, but we are also having heavy rains. So they happen and then they kind of die or they're getting suppressed. So which means that the smoke doesn't travel very far. So the haze that we are seeing now is most probably from fires that are nearby and pretty recent. But Malaysia will usually experience transboundary haze during the dry season. We have dry seasons every year, but how dry it is for that particular year will depend on a few things. So for example, like the El Nino cycle. So during strong El Nino years, conditions will be especially dry. So when fires occur then, for example, if they are in Indonesia, they will burn for a really long time and the prevailing winds will carry them for really far distances. And scientists are predicting that we may be experiencing a strong El Nino this year. So that is definitely cause for concern.
Okay, so let's focus on transboundary haze because we have laws domestically to govern open burning and the like. So local haze can be contained, so to speak, through local legislation or domestic legislation. Can we talk a little bit about regional transboundary haze? Because a regional problem, so ASEAN recognized haze as a regional problem. I think it's been four decades now, and there's been multiple agreements. I think the agreement two decades since an international agreement was inked. Can you talk a little bit about the 2002 ASEAN agreement on transboundary haze pollution and how far that's gone in addressing the issue of transboundary haze?
Sure. So ASEAN has been, like you say, really instrumental in really coordinating regional response. So you've mentioned already the ASEAN agreement. We also have other things like the SOP for monitoring, assessment and joint emergency response. And we also have a haze-free roadmap, among other things. So the agreement itself is quite significant. It's the only ASEAN environmentally legal instrument. So as we know, ASEAN usually doesn't really like legally binding stuff. So legally binding instruments are quite special. And this is part of the ASEAN way, you know, mode of engagement. So the fact that all the member states, even those who are not severely affected by haze, like the Philippines, agreed to accede to this agreement is actually quite unprecedented. So that itself goes quite far to recognize that haze is a transboundary issue that requires transboundary response. And so it sets the tone for this regional response. You know, ASEAN actually has played a big part in ensuring that haze stays on the regional agenda, because as we know, it's a seasonal thing, it comes and goes. But the fact that we have all these agreements on ASEAN means that at least regularly there will be meetings, sharings, discussions on how to prevent, monitor and mitigate haze. For example, the next COP for the ASEAN haze agreement will actually be happening next month. So that's just a bit for now, I think.
Okay. Well, can you talk a little bit more about how the legally binding agreement comes into force or is put in action? And what are some of the challenges and perhaps limitations that comes with having, you know, an ASEAN agreement?
Yeah, so a legally binding agreement is all well and good. But then the limitations in, for example, this ASEAN agreement is that there is no mechanism for enforcement and also for actually making sure that countries commit to their promises. So these are some of the limitations of the agreement. But there have been other things that have put into place, like, for example, the roadmap that have tried to fill in the gaps and try to strengthen and operationalize several aspects of the agreement. So these are sort of the step-by-step procedures that ASEAN is trying to do to eventually strengthen the whole framework of HIGS. However, these challenges still remain. The main thing of which is that transboundary HIGS by nature means that there's always going to be an element of blame. And this really feeds in closely to the national interest idea of the countries involved. So this has been a major challenge in operationalizing these regional mechanisms. So as we know, usually when we have transboundary HIGS, countries will actually come and say, you know, Indonesia, please, can you do something about it? Or do you need any help? So sometimes this often rubs Indonesia the wrong way. So they will say that it's not in line with, for example, the ASEAN good neighborliness values. And then this is where finger pointing will begin. So the fires, yes, they are in Indonesia, but some of the lands that the fires are occurring maybe have Malaysian interests or Singaporean interests. So how dare Malaysia or Singapore complain? So this often comes into play and puts a dampener on all the cooperation that's already been arranged in advance. And maybe one more example that I can give, the ASEAN agreement actually have very detailed procedures for assistance from neighboring countries. So it should actually be very straightforward. If there's a fire, no need for any diplomatic formalities, assistance can come in, can flow in from any country that's willing to give. But, you know, sometimes source countries, they feel that this is, it looks bad on them because it shows that they cannot handle their own problems. Actually, what ASEAN is trying to do is to create that normalized space to say that it's a regional problem and responsibility should be shared. So these are some of the limitations. In 2016, some of the recent things that has happened is the ASEAN HIGS Free Roadmap. And the goal of this roadmap to actually have transboundary HIGS Free ASEAN by 2020. So this was really trying to update the agreement and getting us on a timeline, which the agreement did not have. I was part of the team that was engaged to kind of assess the progress of the roadmap. And interestingly, we did not have HIGS in 2020, which was the goal year of the roadmap. But I'm sure it's not really very difficult to figure out. It's not necessarily because of things changing on the ground, but it's more because of COVID. COVID has stopped or slowed down a lot of economic activity, a lot of land use change related with fires. So we still do have quite a way to go. And now ASEAN is trying to develop a new roadmap to kind of take over from where the old one has left off.
Okay. Dr. Helena, very interesting, this element of blame that comes into play when you're talking about a regional framework to tackle a regional problem. Can we talk about non-state actors and the role that they play in the HIGS? And how do governments kind of get a handle on that? And how does ASEAN get a handle on non-state actors? I'm talking specifically about how palm oil production may play a role in transboundary HIGS.
Okay, so of course, the corporate sector is an important player in this. So for example, palm oil, pulp and paper, actually over the years, corporates have really improved because there's been so much attention being put on them globally in the ASEAN level, from the governments, from the civil society. So you will actually not really see a lot of corporates lighting fires anymore. So they don't actually hold the match and really burn the lands. So this is a good progress. And I think this was the importance of this pressure that's being put and the fact that they have become very visible and no longer kind of under the radar. But there are still problems, for example, the very fact that they are still present on peatlands. Peatlands are very sensitive areas. They are very fire prone. They can easily light on fire when it's drained. So these are some of the sort of related issues that still result or that can still result in fire. When plantations open up in secluded areas, they have to build roads. So villagers will come in and villagers will have access to places that are sensitive and they may cause accidental fires, or there may be arson issues when there are conflicts over land. So all this is very important in this whole thing. So how ASEAN is trying to get a handle on that, For ASEAN, the haze is actually parked under the ASEAN social cultural pillar. So it's a bit separate from the ASEAN economic pillar. So this is one of the problems. This pillarization of ASEAN issues kind of limits the ability, for example, for ASEAN to talk directly to an agriculture minister, or to get these people to attend the meetings. So this is, I would say, a limitation. And I think ASEAN increasingly understands that, and that we should actually involve all of these different parties to make sure that every aspect is really aligned with each other. So these are some of the challenges, I think, still.
Well, as a member of ASEAN, what do you think that Malaysian policymakers should be prioritizing to tackle haze domestically and at an ASEAN level?
So for Malaysia, I think one of the things that have been discussed in the past years is the Malaysian Transboundary Haze Pollution Act. So this was something that kind of came on the back of the Singaporean version of the act. And I think Malaysia thought that they could contribute in that way as well. So why I'm saying this is I think this is one of the things that we should prioritize. And in the past, we see that Singapore put the act into place, but there were problems. So for example, Singapore's act actually was along the lines that anyone, any entity that caused haze in Singapore is liable. So this kind of rubbed Indonesia the wrong way when Singapore started sending show cause letters to Indonesian companies. So actually what Malaysia was trying to do in the beginning when this act was discussed, and I was part of the consultation process in the ministry. So what we kind of recommended, and we said we should learn from what Singapore did, and we should try and avoid the pitfalls. So some of the things that we were trying to propose is that for the Malaysian Act, it should just cover Malaysian companies. It should not go beyond that. And not necessarily to catch out the companies and to say that we want to catch these Malaysian companies and shame them or anything like that. But it's actually just to create a framework or an institutionalized check and balance system to ensure that Malaysian companies are not only acting well in Malaysia, but also abroad. So we are not contributing to haze anywhere. So I think this should be one of the priority areas. And the minister has mentioned that they're going to hopefully relook at this. So hopefully we might see this to be further refined and perhaps put into place soon.
Dr. Helena, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Associate Professor of Environmental Politics, Dr. Helena Varki. We're going to take a very quick break here on Consider This. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the recurring problem of haze. What is being done to address the root causes of haze? Joining me now is Heng Kia Chun. He is the regional campaign strategist at Greenpeace Southeast Asia. Kia Chun, thank you for joining me. As I understand it, a couple of years ago, Greenpeace Malaysia filed a landmark complaint along with the NGO Chira to push for the recognition of basic human rights to clean, haze-free air. I'm wondering if we could begin our conversation there as to why you argue that we should view haze through a human rights lens.
Okay, thank you for that. First of all, haze is caused by the forest fire and peatland destructions coming from domestic and transboundary sources. Haze pollution is the symptom of unsustainable agricultural activity. So without these man-made peatland destructions, haze wouldn't happen. So this haze pollution have resulted in the patterns of extensive social, environmental, and economic harm. People in Malaysia who are affected by these haze pollutions, they have no access to justice. That is why, together with a group of Malaysian civil society organizations such as Chera, Kami, Perke, etc., we are calling for a systemic solutions for overcoming haze pollutions and protecting our rights to clean air. Among the main hopes for four recommendations that we seek from Suakang are strengthening the recognitions of environmental rights in Malaysia, strengthening Malaysia air quality governance, strengthening governance on transboundary haze pollution, and strengthening business and human rights in Malaysia.
Okay. All right. So can I just ask you, I mean, if we are to view it through environmental rights, through a human rights lens, do you think the public views it that way? Do you think the public engages engages with it and supports all the efforts to address the haze issue? You know, especially since there may be a certain, I don't know, blaseness about it, because it comes back every year. It's a perennial problem.
Yeah, I understand that a lot. I think that when haze came back, lots of people sometimes they talk to us, they're saying that they feel helpless, they feel powerless. But actually, a lot of people would like to take actions. Therefore, we are proposing three solutions. The first thing is protect and restore peatlands. As most of the haze problems, transboundary haze problem came from Indonesia. So today, together with local community in Indonesia, Greenpeace is doing the peatland restoration to protecting the remaining rainforest. Meanwhile, Greenpeace is working with community in Dosan in Riau, Sumatra, in Sanggau, Setakau, and Sintang in West Kalimantan to showcase the best practice of growing the agricultural the products in a sustainable way. And all this smallholder run by the farmer is demonstrating the best practices that deforestation-free agricultural productions and protections of the forest can go hand in hand. The second one is NTPE policy. Many global brands and companies, they have a supply chain management policy that means that meet NTPE commitments, also known as no deforestations, no peat, no exploitations. That means no implementing new development on peatland, encouraging best practices on the existing land. In 2017, we managed to pressure banker, HSBC Bank, to stop funding forest destructions. And because of that, and also it also forced some of the trader to improve their supply chain management, which means if I do, you make a policy, when they will enforce it, you are also demand the same to your supplier. Therefore, we need more company to stop forest and peatland clearance, start restoring peatland and demand same to the supplier. And what does it mean? It means that responsible company, traders, and global brand must take a step. Last but not least, is we need a Transboundary Haze Act to address this haze pollution issue.
Okay, can we touch on that, the Transboundary Haze Pollution Act? So in 2020, there was supposed to be a bill, and then that was shelved, I think. So where do we go from here? Is legislation the right way to go about addressing the issue of haze, of transboundary haze? And where do you see the current gaps in haze pollution laws?
Okay, the current gap is the member states of ASEAN are using ASEAN waves, also known as no interference principle, to address this problem. So use more a diplomatic way to solve this problem. And currently, the focus is still facilitating regional diplomatic cooperations to respond to fire rather than provide a regional regime of legal accountability for wrongdoer who contributes to fire. That is also the reason we want to push for Transboundary Haze Act to highlight that diplomatic cooperations between government in Southeast Asia can coexist with law that hold domestic company responsible for its international misconduct that affect the regions. At the same time, develop a two-pronged approach that combine diplomacy and actions-oriented accountability to strengthen our Malaysian government strategy of tackling the haze issue in the long run. This also means that it can institutionalize check and balance to prove that Malaysian companies are not contributing to haze locally and abroad.
Okay. Do you see this type? Do you see this getting some traction, at least in this government, this unity government? Do you see any political will pushing in the direction of a new legislation?
If there's a will, there's a way. Because last time the governments in 2019, the governments want to propose to have this law, and after the change of government, then they just abandoned it. So it's time for us to restart the conversations that we need transboundary haze law.
Okay, so I know that Greenpeace is trying to restart this conversation in the public realm. There are public murals, there are posters around KL and Penang in collaboration with various artists. Can we talk a little bit about how Greenpeace intends to use art as a tool for activism, as a tool for advocacy?
Okay, art is part of activism. Art is a tool to push for social change. We have put up some of the mural all around Kuala Lumpur and Penang areas to raise awareness. And because we want to talk an issue in a simple and more creative way, this can also enable us to reach more audience and inspire more people to take actions together.
So are you seeing that reflected? I mean, in the people who view the art and the murals, what do you think is missing, Kiachun, from the conversation? Are people having the right conversations?
I would say we are tackling from different approach, because sometimes talking about this very complicated transboundary haze issue, people tend to. There are a lot of people, the feedback is they say, oh, it's too complicated. It's not easy to understand. That is also the reason we approach a different artist. We put out a mural, draw something, paint something. Then we want to use the message of the arts to tell people that these are the situations right now. And there are lots of actions can be taken to address this issue. And we hope that we can use as creative as possible, as simple as possible to reach more audience, and so that it can more people can take actions.
Well, what kind of action are you hoping that they'll take? What do you think that individuals and communities, organizations who are keen to pressure for change, what is it that they can do?
Okay. Next month, on June 7 to 8, the five ASEAN member states, which are Malaysia, Brunei, Indonesia, Singapore, and Thailand, they will have a meeting in Singapore to discuss this transboundary haze issue. And this came very timely because we are now collecting petitions as an US government to enact a Transboundary Haze Act. This is a good opportunity to prove that Malaysian companies operate responsibly and not causing fire outside Malaysia. And at the same time, we also have our exhibitions at Rex KL Jalan Sultan Kuala Lumpur, start from 11 o'clock morning to 8 o'clock from 5th to 14th of May. So if you want to get more info, you can just go to our Greenpeace social media using the hashtag #TakNakJerebu and Clean Air for All. Then you can find more the actions that we can take actions together.
All right, Jacqueline, thank you so much for being on the show today. Heng Kiachun from Greenpeace Southeast Asia wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.